This is WBAA. I'm Mike Lowitzo. The phrase open access in academics refers to the free, immediate, online access to information, specifically scholarly research, and the right to reuse results as needed. Purdue professor Darcy Bullock was recently named the recipient of the university's 2012 Faculty Award for Leadership in Open Access. He joins me in the studio along with Ada Emmett, visiting associate professor of library sciences. Thanks so much for coming in.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
Darcy, let's start with you. And the award you received was work primarily you do as director of the Joint Transportation Research Project here at Purdue.
That's correct.
What exactly are you doing there at the center?
So we have a partnership with the Indiana Department of Transportation. It's a center that facilitates collaboration between NDOT and universities to help the state do things cheaper, better, faster, safer.
You basically have a journal, a repository of all sorts of information, correct?
Yeah, we have about 1,500 technical reports, and we've got online the series dating back to the 1950s.
And it was this effort that you received this award.
That's correct. You know, part of our contract and part of publicly funded research is to make it available to government entities. And partnering with the library really provided us with a very cost-effective way, a low overhead approach to get that material out and accessible to agencies so that it's not just sitting on the shelf in a library. It's easily accessible in this, you know, modern internet age. And in addition to just complying with good policies, good stewardship on research, it's really opened the door to public agencies finding our research results that probably wouldn't have been available 3 or 4 years ago because they're not going to make that effort to drive to campus and walk the stacks to get a technical report. Or mail-in requests, and we had this warehouse full of reports that we were spending a small fortune printing and maintaining. So the library really showed us the way and how to move into the future, get these out, and the growth has been just explosive on the internet. I mean, we've had over 400,000 downloads since we've put this on. We've had one report by Professor Salgado that's had over 22,000 downloads.
Where are these people who are downloading? Are they all in the United States? Is it global?
They're all over the place. I mean, we see a huge number of downloads for Indiana, the United States, China, India, Canada, Germany. And by topic area, you'll have different topic areas will be of interest to different areas of the country because we have a very broad portfolio of research. It's asphalt pavement, concrete pavement, bridges, planning, safety.
Have you done a study or just a glance over as to what countries are accessing what types of information?
You know, that's actually a really good question. I mean, we continue to work with our partners in the library to mine the data, and they've been helping us tease out some of those trends.
Yeah.
I mean, we probably need to go back and look at that, but I can't give you specifics on that.
Now, you all had the honor of being the 3 millionth download from Purdue EPUBs. Do you know what that specific one was?
Yeah, that was a technical report prepared by a former faculty member, Sid Diamond, who works in the materials area. So it was kind of fun to see that one of our faculty members that was still in the community was recognized with that download. I think Professor Olick's still in touch with him, and Sid was thrilled to see his report as the 3 millionth download.
Ada, what is the university's status, I guess, in open access? Maybe we should say you're a visiting professor from University of Kansas, correct?
That's correct. So I'm kind of on loan from the University of Kansas this year. And Purdue has certainly been on the cutting edge of experimenting with various projects that provide public access to both print and digital resources that then become digital and be put online. Purdue's been very interested in such projects as digitizing and putting online these working papers and technical reports, but also the kind of prime scholarly journal literature as well, and making that accessible to any and all that would like to have access to it.
The layperson would think, what's the big deal? This should be open to everyone, but this is sort of a business as far as the journal side of things, correct?
Correct. It's certainly evolved into a business. Traditionally, and we're talking hundreds of years, the way scholars communicated with each other was essentially in a gift economy. So they would write notes, letters to each other. This is what I found in the lab, and they'd write those notes and letters. Those eventually, using the most advanced technology of the day, got bound together and printed and then disseminated through the mail, through horse and donkey, and then planes and trains to other scholars, and then collected in libraries where, again, people could come and use those results. But now, obviously, we have this new technology, and that actually extends the way the access can be provided. But about 30, 40 years ago, commercial publishers realized that this was quite an advantage to them if they inserted themselves. And so now we have this cost barrier that keeps the access limited. So you can't make money on it if everyone in the world has access to it. And yet everyone in the world, essentially, you could argue, has funded that research endeavor globally through taxes, through endowments, through tuition. The taxpayer is funding that research and having to pay again, sometimes very high fees to access that kind of commercially owned scholarly journal article.
Darcy, as a professor, what's been your experience?
There's two things that are really attractive to us from kind of the open access. The first is, as a researcher or a student, it's really nice to be able to put your work out there and know that a colleague in another state, DOT, can get that paper, download it, and implement it without having to pay, you know, $75 to download the copy. The other part that's really nice from our students graduating, when they have these technical reports in the libraries, you know, in the old days, they would mail paper copies of their reports or they'd carry around this 200-page document. And it's pretty impressive as the library packages it up nicely and the students send them a nice link, and it just allows the students to project a very strong image that they can prepare a professionally appearing report. And I think it's really wowed some of the employers on, hey, these students coming out of Purdue have some nice skills.
What are some obstacles to overcome, Ada?
In some ways, you could say the issues are quite simple. The benefits are quite obvious. But there are, below that simple level, there are some complexities that have to do with intellectual property rights, copyright, who owns the work, whether an author is surrendering all copyrights to the publisher and therefore surrendering the ability to control the access to that work or not. One of the challenges is communicating that out to individual authors, to individual departments and units and universities and globally to policymakers. Those complexities of who should own it, who does own it, how do we make those changes? And also understanding what are the potential futures for this? Because we certainly don't want the method by which scholars validate their research through the scholarly publishing system to go away. We're actually just looking at a way for those to be universally accessible and yet still have this means of validating the work through peer review continue. And so it's not a roadblock as much as a challenge to bring all the necessary parties together so that those challenges can be overcome in a uniform way. Right now, there are lots of experiments out there that are trying to both provide access, keep the journal system alive and rigorous, and also allow scholars a mechanism by which they can communicate very quickly their research and have it be validated.
So let me make sure I get this straight. I'm a professor or researcher. Mm. I've got a paper that I want to submit to a journal, and I do submit it. Now, in theory, I did the work. It's sort of my ownership, but I have to watch out for publishing rights, so I couldn't post it to my website, in theory.
Correct. In theory, recently, the last dozen or actually scores of years, scholars have essentially relinquished all of their copyrights to the publisher. Mm. The only right that they retain is the right to be listed as the author. The way copyright works then, it means the owner of the copyright controls the access, controls who photocopies it, who puts it up on the web, who disseminates it, who performs it, who displays it. That contract is critical when the author gets their work published, because the author can adjust that contract or can read it fairly carefully, which typically we don't as scholars. We just think, oh, yay, I'm going to get my work published. I'm thrilled. Promotion and tenure. But if we read it carefully, we can often see, oh, some rights they are allowing me to retain. Or as a contract, I can decide to negotiate that contract a bit to say, I want to retain enough rights to put it on the web or to share in the classroom or to later have it published in a book of collected works, which normally may not be allowed. So as an author, it's important to understand those rights that are being surrendered or not.
Do you think graduate students or newer faculty are aware of this?
Well, this is part of our work. This is part of my work. This is part of what both libraries and scholars who have become activists in this are trying to do in outreach, working with graduate students and faculty to understand. In fact, I often issue the challenge to scholars and graduate students, read that contract. If you do nothing else, just read it. First of all, it's kind of long and boring, but there are embedded in that some important things that will tell you something. At least be an informed consumer of what you're giving away and what you're retaining. Graduate students, as you mentioned, they're actually very keen on this idea in general. It's a no-brainer for them.
Open access.
Open access. Yeah. The idea that why wouldn't the work be available online? Why would I have to pay again? So that outreach has really become an important aspect of what we do in the libraries.
It seems like universities in general are the ones to lead the effort.
I actually was interested to kind of draw a dotted line between the university's mission and this idea of providing the widest possible access to the scholarship that is published and done at Purdue, and also the work that's vetted and edited and reviewed by scholars at Purdue, because Purdue's mission as a land-grant institution, but also just broadly as a university, you know, states fairly clearly that, you know, the mission of Purdue University is to serve the citizens of Indiana, the United States, and the world through discovery that expands the realm of knowledge. It goes on, but I would comment that that expansion of the realm of knowledge requires that the public have access to the research results as best as possible so that they can build on it, expand it, and use that in practice. Whether it's policymakers, high school students and teachers, junior colleges that can't afford the high cost of subscriptions, all around the world. And then the mission goes on, but I think we can point to this fact that providing that widest possible access is an advantage to the university to get our name out further, as well as to kind of show accountability for this is what we've done, and we're sharing it, of course, in the broadest possible way. So I think considering that mission is a helpful thing.
And there's an open access week each year at the end of October on a website with more information. It's openaccessweek.org. Ada Emmett and Darcy Bullock, thanks so much for coming in.
Thank you.
You're
listening to WBAA. I'm Mike Lowitzow.